So we continue the journey, and tonight I'd like to speak about wise action, or action from now, action from now. And I hope this that you sort of, if those of you who aren't used to my style, understand that I try to use different words than some of the other speakers. So that I found in my own practice that when I hear something said differently, that it sort of takes me out of a particular perception that I've held within what I have heard and frees me up a little bit. So that it allows more kind of latitude and movement. And it was very helpful for me. So I will be using different words tonight, but I also expect to bring all the words that have been used into this word, these words, so that we're not with a new set, a new philosophy, right? That's my hope. Oh, please, please. So there was a time in my practice, not actually so long ago, when I got very tired of just my reactivity, my conditioned patterns, my habits. And like the Buddha, who said he's not moving until he's awakened, I did something a little less a resolve, but nevertheless it was important for me. I said, you know, I'm not going to move until I'm not going to move out of conditioning or fear. I'm just not going to move out of conditioning or fear. And there was this prolonged sense of awkwardness. Because what else moves you? And then movement happened. But I really have learned something about action in making that resolve. Because there's another possibility afoot. And I would just like to read what in the Tao Te Ching, I don't fill so much of my talks with quotes, but this one was so relevant that I wanted to. And it says, do you have the patience to wait till your mind settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? What I have noticed is that the more relaxed and tensionless I am, the closer to now I become. Okay, so I want to start defining my words now. I will call now the resolution of the Buddha's teaching. Okay? So first I'm going to talk about now, and then we're going to talk about actions from now. So what do I mean by that? It's a very bold statement. Seems very close when you say it like that, doesn't it? I want it to be close. It is that close. It's as close as now. Why do we make this thing so distant? Now, a person has four dimensions, right? Height, width, length, and time. Right? Four dimensions. Now has three dimensions, right? Infinite space, infinite height, infinite. It does not hold time. So you begin to see the problem. If the person holds time and now does not, how does the person enter now? How can that happen? So the person simply cannot enter now unless we release time. So how do we release time? Well, what holds time? Time is held by thought only. Thought, if you look, as Joseph was describing in his instructions the day before yesterday, thought holds all the past, all the future. It even holds the concept of the here and now. And so with that, holding on to thought, I can't enter now, because now is only three dimensions, and four dimensions simply can't enter three. So now is still, because there's no time in now. It's absolutely still, because all of movement is time, right? All of movement is going somewhere. So there's no movement in absolute stillness. And therefore, to bring in Joseph's talk last night, there is no grasping. Because grasping, if you think about it, is what I want, what I don't have now, and what I want up in front of me, ahead of me. And so from now, just follow this, if you could, there is no grasping. Now let's look at the other Dharma talks from now. The nature of mind. The nature of mind is revealed in the absence of identification with thought. So it's revealed within now. In fact, the nature of mind is now. They are not two separate events. In fact, the essence of us is now. Okay, and then I talked about the two hemispheres of the mind coming together and what held that mind in struggle to one another was the argument or resistance of one hemisphere disputing the experience of the other. The conversation, the squabbling, the argument between the two. And in now, those hemispheres heal. They're one and the same. They become whole. Because it's the end of the squabble. And then Linda talked about faith. So let's look at faith in terms of now. When we are, when there is abiding in now, there is a complete unknown about where now is going or what now is. And so we are in a complete unknown, really. It's the unknown. Because thought creates the known of what my expectations. But thought can't enter now. Are you following all this? Therefore, the unknown and now are one and the same thing. Therefore, any movement from now has to be based not on thought or expectation, but on faith. Movement without certainty is faith. So then look at Heather's talk. Heather spoke about the seven factors of enlightenment. If you take all those seven factors and put them in a blender or in a, if you squash them all together, what comes out of that is awareness. Awareness holds every factor as a perspective of awareness. You can see every factor in awareness. Right? And that's now. And then last night Joseph spoke about the grasping and the end of grasping. And grasping is the, as I mentioned, the thought of something being better up ahead, of time, of the resolution of my sorrow in time, that I work it out, that I will up ahead have a better moment than the one I'm in. And at some point we see that the contentment factor never arrives, the payoff is never what it was promised, and we sort of give up that particular pursuit. And when we drop the need to continually look ahead of ourselves. That's the end of attachment. Non-attachment is not something we can force. I think we misunderstand what attachment is. We think we have a whole list of problematic relationships in our life, and we do a check-off. You know, my children now have probably, for some of you, you know, if they were to die, I would still be on, therefore I must be attached. Nonsense. Okay? Let's look at this differently. Let's look at this very differently. The sense of self, the me, cannot check off attachments because the end of me is the non-attachment we're looking for. And we just get more fulfilled by through the check-off list, don't we? Feeling very accomplished as we resolve one problem only to turn into another. We cannot get rid of attachments. We can get rid of the self. And I don't mean that in an aversive sense. So freedom is abiding in now as now. So now is not conditioned. Now I'm just going to take you, I'm going to go to the end of Joseph's talk last night and see if we can have some further understanding of that. Knowing, the knowing of awareness and the emptiness of awareness, the resolution of that. So let's just look at that for a moment. And then I'll get into action. But I just... So as we... now, there is the now of form. The now of form is what most of us understand now to be. We connect with the sense data as it's coming in, and we think we're in the here and now through contact with the sense data. And we think, okay, the bird's singing, my thoughts are arising, and all of that. And we think, okay, so this is now. This is the now of form. The now of form is expressing itself as the sense data, as my thoughts, as everything going on. And we think we're really abiding in there. But if you look carefully, you're still in there. You're still in the now, right? Then there's the now of the formless. And the now of the formless holds, is the space that holds all of the sense data. It's not the expression of form, because if you looked at it, all of that bird singing and thinking really is the past coming into the now through recognition. But the space that holds all of that is the now of the formless now. So is the now of form, which is the one that most of us try to connect with. And then there's the now of the formless, which is the space that holds all of the data and which some of us are learning to appreciate for itself. Now I'm going to just go a little further. But the now itself is unconditioned, because conditions, things that are conditioned, are of time, right? Conditioned things are of time. But now we have just said time can't enter. So now is essentially the unconditioned. Now the unconditioned, if we are very quiet in ourselves, we get a sense, a visceral sense. It is not a sense through the sense data. A visceral sense of something what I can only call the dark, the wondrous dark. And the wondrous dark, the first expression, and expression is much too gross of a word, and I have no words that hold the subtlety, but the first, it's like a pebble, the smallest grain of sand, the first meeting of the unconditioned into the form of now, the form of now, is the knowing within now. So the now holds not only the unconditioned, because time can't enter, but the first expression. You see, the Buddha said, somebody asked him, these aren't the exact words, but they mean the same thing. Somebody asked the Buddha, he said, Bhante, Reverend Sir, what is it that holds all the sense data? The Buddha said, what's the locus of all the sense data? Where does all the sense data come in? And the Buddha said, the mind is the locus of all the sense data, right? In the mind, all the sense data comes into being. And the man said, Sir, what's the locus of the mind? What holds all the activity of the mind within it? And the Buddha said, awareness. Sati, awareness holds all of the sense data within it. And then the man said, what holds awareness within it? What's the locus of awareness? And the Buddha said, the unconditioned. So, as we enter more and more into now, the first thing we meet are all of our resistances, our past manifestations, our past expressions of ourself, the boring now, the sense of tedious now, the sense of the absence of excitement, all of that. And as we begin to steady ourselves and are willing to feel those components, those resolve themselves into more and more quietude. And as we sit with more and more quietude, we see that the forms of the now give way to the formless expression of now, which is awareness itself, the sense of presence. And as we sit with a sense of presence, very still, there is a visceral sense of something that is of wondrous dark, from which all things are arising. And we begin to understand that this journey is simply into this moment of time. And it is not about being here now as some place to go with this, for the sense of self. It's about the only way that we can get there is to alleviate the sense of self, the baggage of the sense of self. And when we do that, we find ourselves within the unconditioned qualities of the very moment that we have always lived right up next to, but have thought our way out of. We think our way out of nirvana. It's here. Samsara and nirvana are absolutely one and the same. We just think our way out of that. Moment after moment. Because it holds a terrifying resolve. And that resolve is, I have to give up myself to enter it. And most of us have other intentions for our life than that one. And so those other intentions fly around the here and now. We, like a moth around a flame, but few of us fly into the flame because of the terror of what that flame might contain. And so we get a sense of the spiritual journey is not something far off and remote. It's something extraordinarily close and proximate. It's not even distant in terms of time, but immediate in its relevance. And that we only believe ourselves to be outside of the here and now, because how could any part of ourselves ever exactly live outside of the here and now? So the nature of mind is the here and now, because it's impossible for us to be anywhere else. Impossible. And the only way it can seem as if we are out of the here and now is to think our way into time. Because time is past or future away from now. And now, the now of time is the now that's between the rock of the future and the hard place of the past. In a very narrow opening it is indeed. So you see a sense of wonder? Just get a sense that we are surrounded by wonder. And all of our miseries occur from the sense of time. All of our fears, what we think will happen, we are afraid of. All of our desires are encased within that thought of time. Our story, which is so embellished over time. And all of that seems as if, because it can only seem as if, we are so far and distant from any sense of freedom. So, how does the Buddha resolve this problem that isn't really a problem? It's just an assumed problem. Isn't this interesting? Now, it's very interesting. If we throw another metaphor, we have a continuum from 0 to 1. Okay? And most of us are somewhere, well, we all are, somewhere between 0 and 1. And we, on our spiritual path, feel very much like a 1, but we want to head towards 0. That's the goal, you might say. And so we do all the things that we think are right to head towards 0, and much of what we do is actually heading more towards 1. Because most of us are unwilling to admit to the fundamental reason that we don't want to be 0. We really don't. We're scared to death of what that might hold. And when some of us feel, in the course of this week, some of us have felt, we enter into now almost accidentally, and suddenly what I hear most frequently when somebody enters into now, in other words, just has a moment of non-thought, this is big. this is too big, is really what they're saying. I want something contained. I want something that can be packaged within my thoughts so that I have a predictable world. And in these moments of expansion, infinite expansion, because without time there's only the infinite, everything else is measured, but measurement means time, right? So in these moments of infinite measurement, it's like blows me away. Right, it blows you away. That's exactly right. So we don't realize that in that intentionality, we come back with a different intentionality to head towards 1 as quick as we can get there and away from 0. And we actually use our practice to solidify the resolve towards oneness. And oneness means just that. We would like to be connected, but we want to be connected like popcorn on a string, not a single ball. We want to know ourselves and also, it's like holding hands. We're all connected now. Okay? But that's not what connection is. Connection is the dazzling dark. Connection is the wondrous dark. And it's here. And until we want it, it just will stay distant, that's all. And it's not that we can force ourselves to want it. We have to see that one doesn't pay off, that it hurts to be one. The Buddhist teaching is about that. Pay attention to the fact that you hurt as one, and you'll naturally move towards 0. That's really as simple message. And he says, he shows you how you hurt towards one. And he says, just own the responsibility that the fact that you're making yourself hurt. Don't blame it. And then you'll naturally be moved towards zero. And it won't be scary. Well, maybe scary, but it won't. You won't be irresolute in your determination towards that end. And how do you move towards zero from one? Through faith. Because you can't stand moving the other direction. And that's the only direction you can move. And so you do. And you don't have any idea what you're doing. Now, actions from now. Let us look at actions from now. I want to talk about three characteristics of actions from now, authentic action. The most common that is spoken about in relationship to wise action, and may I say, first of all, I want to regress just for a moment, that it makes no sense at all to pick out one of the pieces of the Eightfold Path and talk about it separate from the whole scaffolding of the path. You can't pick out mindfulness as a separate thing and expect it to have any kind of meaning. The whole Eightfold Path is the meaning, is the purpose, is the direction, is the intention, is the energy. And so, first of all, we need to know the direction we're going when we're in action. And we're moving from one to zero. That's wise view. What does wise view look like in action? Using action to step out of separation. Surrendering, the willingness to surrender our separation. Now let me just show you how wise action, and I said I wouldn't talk about wise speech, but I've got to now because I'm off and running. So tomorrow you will start engaging in wise speech and from a sense of presence in the beginning, hopefully. Now if you notice that, the sense of presence is you're close to now. That's what, right? You're the sense of mindfulness, of awareness, and you're feeling it as you're going towards zero. You're not there because you're still carrying yourself with you, but you're on the road. So, as you speak, you'll feel the sense of presence, and then you'll say something that's slightly off in tone, in truth, or something. And you'll feel the absence of that sense of presence. In the moment you speak divisively, you'll feel the absence of the sense of presence because sense of presence comes from unity. And use it as a guide. It's beautiful. Like, I'll sit there and speak to someone, and then I'll say something wrong, and I'll be thrown out of the Garden of Eden. I'm out. And I think, oh my. Okay, now just see what happened. Don't should yourself or ego, super egoic yourself. Just, and then you're back, and then, but it becomes so precious, the sense of presence, the sense of awareness becomes so precious that you don't want to do anything to put yourself out of alignment with that because you realize that your whole spiritual life depends upon staying in alignment with zero. And when you feel yourself, see, this is wise view, when you feel yourself in wise intention, when you feel yourself in discord through words of backbiting, gossiping, all the things that Joseph talked about, you realize that you have ventured back towards one, and that becomes irreconcilable. And so, actions of body, speech, and mind follow the intentionality to move towards zero from one. And it doesn't become a moral statement. It's not like I better had. It becomes something that your heart can't tolerate not doing. Because it's intolerable to cause harm. The first major change that anyone in this practice goes through, and perhaps all of you in the room have already passed this point, is that you just don't want to cause harm anymore. You don't want your life to be a statement of harm to others. And so you're already within the vast arena of wise view, with wise intention. Now we just have to make sure that we're not heading back towards one by being moralistic about our actions of body, speech, and mind. This is an action from and towards now. So the first quality of wise action is perceptual action within wise view and intention, surrendering separation through body, speech, and mind, surrendering my need to go towards one and stay connected within presence. The second property or characteristic of wise action or action from now, and this is really interesting, is non-goal-oriented action. So let's look at this one. When I'm reaching, I really don't care about the reaching. I care about what I'm reaching for, the future of my reach, the procurement of my grasp. When I'm walking to the store, that's wasted time. Get me to the store as fast as possible so I can buy the bread. That's still wasted time. So I can get home and eat the sandwich from the bread. Okay? So everything in between the action that I have initiated and the goal of where I want is really just waste downtime. If we look at walking meditation in terms of this, walking meditation to the mind, which is interested in the goal orientation, means it's ludicrous. It's nonsensical. It's why everybody looks so ridiculous to other people, because it has no purpose. Zombies. So minds looking at you seem absolute insanity. It does. But from the point of view of living the intention towards zero, it makes perfect sense, because now we are recovering all the wasted moments, because this moment can't possibly be wasted. It's precious for itself. It's not a means to an end. It's an end in itself. I'm not moving here to get to there. Action is expressive of the living reality of now, moment after moment. See, the mind thinks in terms of goal, future, procurement, because what it thinks, it says, what I have now is not sufficient. What I will have will make me more sufficient, content, or whatever. I have to get over now to get what it is that will allow me to be happy. Its happiness is in terms of time. So it misses the joy of the life that's being lived for the sense of resolution of desire, which it claims will bring happiness. Or it does this. Most of us feel like we have to be doing something all the time in order to be worth anything. This sense of productivity, this sense of accomplishments, this sense of doing. The sense of ego has to look for results, quantifiable results. What have you done today? I sat for 3 hours. No, that's not good enough. I didn't get the house clean, didn't get the dishes washed, got nothing done. So what are you going to do when you face yourself on Saturday morning? Be productive and useful and head towards one? Or sit, be useless, and in line with your zero? The question is, can we do both? And that is the key. The key is we can do both. It's not as if we have to forget the goal in order to be heading towards zero. We just can't let the goal be predominant over the movement, over the means to get it done. You see? So it's not quantitative, which is goal-oriented. It's qualitative. I can be walking from here to my car, knowing exactly where I'm going, and be totally available to the experience of getting there. Or I can walk to the car with one goal in mind, where I'm going to drive once I'm there. And everything in between is wasted time. So it's not as if our life falls apart in this. We recover it through this. But we have to be willing to invest, as Joseph mentioned today, in every aspect of our life. Because every aspect, the now, we're either in and realize we're in the now, or we're distancing far from it and separating ourselves further and further with hardening conditioning towards further self-pain. The other thing that's fun when you don't make the goal more important than the means is serendipity. It's like suddenly when you're living the moment and you think you're going somewhere and you get there, you find that the reason you went there is far different than the reason you thought you were going there. Suddenly the whole world becomes kind of miraculous. And it becomes fun. And the miraculous, the wonders of life, is just presenting its different, just expressions. And all of us have had the experience of, thinking of somebody turning a corner and there they are, or things that we call coincidence. Coincidence is just the expression of life playing forth upon itself. It's no such thing as coincidence. It's just the miraculous. So we bring back in the wonder by not holding fast to just the goal of what we're doing. And that's tremendously freeing. And walking meditation is an attempt to bring forth the miraculous in movement. And most of us just think, okay, now I've got to walk. We take it as a project, as a sort of something else I have to do. A penance. Thank you. Okay, the third quality of wise action. Wise action is action. Every action we take reinforces the intentionality and view from which that action comes. Every action we take. So old condition reinforces old view and old pain. It often reaffirms the doubt. Mostly we're operating from the pain that we have not made conscious. And our actions are reactions to the pain that has been driving our life. And so it just hardens that conditioning towards further pain now and in the future. Just look at inadequacy, just something that many of us have. And so there's a sense of inadequacy. Much of our action, if we look at it, can be seen as being derived from some sense of trying to compensate for our inadequacy. In some way or other, we either fall into the belief that we are inadequate, and therefore our actions have a kind of a pitying quality to them. That's one expression. Or they can have a compensation quality, where we feel the inadequacy and we're trying to act so that in the future we can have a different feeling about ourselves. Either way, right, we're in the mood and acting from the mood, from that conditioning. And so much of our actions and so much of our body in action has folded in around those assumptions. How we hold ourselves, how our postures are. One of the reasons that we reinforce body posture in sitting is that that body posture is a body posture of confidence. And because the mind is going to come at us, as we all know, in a less than confident manner, it's going to bring forth doubt, it's going to bring forth discouragement, it's going to bring forth, I can't, all of the different shame, unless we have the body in posture of confidence, then we have, the body will meet the mind state and curl up around it and reinforce that state of mind. So having a straight posture is not just the maximum posture for alertness, it is that as well. It is also the maximum posture to stay steady in states of mind that will be coming if they're not here already. And if we can meet those states of mind from physicality of confidence, we're so much better off. And so in action, we are recovering from our mind state, how our body is. Now, let me, often, every year, I'll go to a retreat, perhaps the same retreat, and the same people or some of the people will be in those retreats year after year, annually. And I will have a discussion with them, and they will be talking about a particular difficulty that they've had. And then we won't see each other for a year, and then I'll come back the same year, and they're exactly where they were the previous year, talking about the same difficulty being held in that particular pattern. And I'm wondering, what was that year about? What was the year? You saw this last year, and there seems to be a stuck within a particular orientation to that problem. And even though there's a great realization or insight into the problem itself, unless the body moves in action in relationship to that problem, we stay stuck in it. You see, wise action is a way out of conditioning. And unless we move ourselves counter to that old conditioning, which is the third characteristic of wise action, it moves counter to old conditioning, we find that even though we have these great insights and we know we should do it, the should never translates itself into action, and so next year we come back to the same understanding. So now I've decided that when somebody, I see somebody like that, I offer the opportunity. I say, okay, so look, this year, last year, the year before, you've had this insight. You want to move it out? With their permission, we'll start deciding a course of action to move out. The first thing I will say to them, write down 3 or 4 points that you would like to do to meet this understanding and have your life go in a different direction. 3 or 4 actions that would take your life over this obstacle, this problem that you're having. And that starts the movement. The writing starts the action. It starts the body movement in relationship to the solution of the problem. Okay? For instance, sometimes, this is a true story, one woman felt a very strong sense of inadequacy when she was with anyone who she projected to have more power than herself. So she said she was at a party, and she was meeting somebody who she had given her power away to, and she felt her eyes lower and her timidity coming out, and she just felt that she was just embodied in that spirit of inadequacy. And I said to her, the next time this happens, look straight at that person's eyes, even though you're screaming inside that you're not worthwhile. Stick your hand out, shake it with some confidence, hold the body as if you believed completely different, as if what you knew your mind was doing was false. So she tries this, and she comes back and she says, well, I tried that, and I said, oh, how'd it go? She said, well, I went up to this person, and I felt myself being timid, and I looked them in the eye, and I held my hand out, and they looked over my shoulder and dismissed me entirely. And I said, well, what was your feeling in that? She says, well, I felt abandoned. I felt like she didn't care a thing about me. And then she said something funny happened. She said the next words were, oh, I was thinking of you, I was just looking at somebody I wanted you to meet. And so she was looking over her shoulder to find that person she wanted this person to meet and was in and introduced her. So it had nothing to do with how her mind was screaming, you see. And that really started her on the journey of a different corrective posture and a different sense of assumption about herself. Now, assumption is an assumption, so a corrected assumption is still an assumption. But a sense of self-appreciation is fundamental to going to zero. You can't hate yourself towards zero. So yes, it's relative, but it's an important step forward. And if we're quiet and on retreat, as Joseph mentioned, you can feel the sense of self-acceptance from awareness for every state of mind, the mood, the emotion, the thought, as it's arising. But when you're active in your life, as an urban Buddhist teacher, I see that most of us don't have that sensitivity of mind to be able to bring awareness to that level. And we're so far enmeshed in our story that we have to follow, trace the radiance. I love that title of that book, Trace the Radiance Backward. So how do we do that? Right? Tracing the radiance backward. So we get caught up in, say, our doubt. And we hold the doubt, and we see the whole historical relevance of our doubt. We see the memories of our doubt. We see all where the doubt was engendered by our parents, and all of that story about doubt. And we just stay quiet to the doubt. Instead of the doubt driving us forward into action, we're going to just hold the doubt as doubt, just as doubt. And it can't force us. Making the unconscious conscious is the whole spiritual path. What remains unconscious, we are enslaved to. What we can bring forth into conscious awareness, we are freed from. Whatever drives us, whatever mood, whatever is back there, unconsciously pushing us forward, to have the settledness of intentionality, to see that. I want to see this. I want to know what it is back there. The willingness to bring it into the moment, away from the thoughts and storyline of our life, to bring it into and towards zero, allows it to be known for what it is. And once something is known for what it is, that's it. How well do we want to know it? What usually happens on the way to knowing something is a hesitation, because we realize that if we know it too much, too thoroughly, we won't be it anymore. And if we're not that, what are we? So we get afraid and go back to being that, because being that is at least somebody. So zero scares us again towards one. But if we hold our ground and just are willing to go right through this thing, the insubstantial quality of all things will be known in that holding. And this is walking it in the direction of zero. This is the movement that the Dharma takes. In active lives, it's going to be far different tomorrow than the quiet subtlety of seeing thought, feeling emotion. Maybe some of you can perpetuate that level of sensitivity, but most of you, because I know firsthand, will not be able to. But you can enter through your emotional life. You can be willing to face your emotional life and disentangle the thread and strangulation of your story around that. And once you're willing to go wherever it takes you, and you're just going to stay with it, it will take you to zero, whether you're on retreat seeing the subtlety at that level or grossly involved in whatever you are in. You can still walk it towards zero. This is not just for the retreatant. It's wonderful to come here to practice, to see the sensitivity, to see the ways that we, on layer upon layer, build upon ourselves. But the practice, in essence, is equally as available to us, regardless of place or time. The question is, do we hold the intentionality to make it primary? Or does our agenda for moving our lives towards one instead of towards zero? The intentionality has to be towards moving it towards zero. If your intentionality for your life is to move it towards one, zero will be long forgotten. Forever. That's why we lose it so quickly. It's the direction we're taking. We don't want to go where it has to take us. Instead of being honest with that and looking at what it is that we do want and seeing if what we do want has the payoff we hope for, which it will not, says the Buddha, and therefore we will naturally, energetically move towards zero when we see that the payoff isn't that great moving towards one, we blame the fact through our doubt, oh, I just wasn't up to it, and next time I'll try harder and I'll get next, you know, or whatever. So this is a journey into our life. This is a journey into ourselves. This is a journey into now. How can we not be willing to go where our one life is manifesting? It's not as if it's manifesting in your thought. If it were so good in there, why would we be here? Because it's not so good. It's painful to stay embracing life through concept, through abstraction. And so some of us begrudgingly say, all right. And what we find is anything but begrudging. We find our life, we find our enthusiasm, we find our vitality, we find our aliveness as we walk towards zero. We find our joy. We find the seven factors of enlightenment. Let's journey this thing together. Let's just not walk it in the wrong direction. At our own time, at our own pace. Nobody needs to push us through this. It's at our own pace. Keeping our eyes open is really all we have to do to stay sane and move towards. in towards the right direction. May we all do that. Thank you.